You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
You've just been listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont, and their rendition of Hot Texas.
And we are your hosts.
We are.
Yeah, who are you?
I'm not sure. Didn't I say that?
Not yet.
Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're delighted to have you with us tonight. This is episode 123 when you go looking for it later. And we have a full house tonight. We are so excited with four guests joining us. Please welcome Richard Prosh, curator and editor. Hello, Richard, of the book we'll be talking about tonight, Through Western Storms. And joining us are contributing author Scott McCray. And here comes Scott. Hello, Scott.
Hello, everyone.
And Elizabeth Grace Foley. And hello, Elizabeth. Hey.
Hello.
Hi. And Denise McAllister. Denise, come on in. Hi. Welcome, everyone. Very quickly, we just want to know where you're all chiming in from. Denise, we'll start with you. Where are you tonight?
Okay, I'm in Jefferson, Georgia, which is about 60 miles northeast of Atlanta. And I try to avoid downtown Atlanta.
Let's see. And how about Elizabeth? Where are you joining us from?
From Troy, New York, which is in upstate New York.
Yeah. Troy, New York. Yeah. Okay. We're from Troy.
And Scott, Scott McCray, where are you?
I'm in a state of decay. I'm in Southern California.
Okay. And last but not least is the man in charge tonight, Richard Prosh, the editor of this fabulous book. Richard, where are you joining us from?
I'm in mid-Missouri, right along the Missouri River here between St. Louis and Kansas City, and it's really cold.
It's really cold.
Does that river ever freeze?
There are big chunks of ice, yeah.
Okay.
It's impressive.
Okay. Well, I think Jim has a little bio. Just get us started with Richard. And then Richard's going to take it away. Tell us a little bit about Richard.
Richard Frost's work has appeared in many magazines, including Mystery Magazine and True West. Winner of the Will Rogers Medallion and multiple Peacemaker Award finalist positions, Richard took home the Spur Award from Russian Writers of America for short fiction. And his 2022 novel, Pony Boys, was a Spur Award finalist. As an anthologist, his book packages have been garnered a Spur, Peacemaker, and Will Rogers Medallion for their contributors. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you.
Richard, before you take it totally away, which we're looking forward to, why don't you just give us a little bit of backstory of how you were inspired to put this anthology together and what were some of the steps that you took to gather the contributing authors?
Well, Through Western Storms is the fourth anthology that I've put together. And the other anthologies, the first two were with Western Fictioneers, which is an organization similar to the Western Writers of America. And we invited all the members of Western Fictioneers to contribute stories. So that was kind of an open call for everybody. With this anthology, I wanted to do something special. This is not affiliated with Western Writers or Western Fictioneers. This is an independent published book. And I wanted to make it special by inviting people to it. So this was never an open submission process. This was select friends of mine, people that I knew were good and either I knew they could really offer a great story, or I wanted to get some exposure for some people who maybe hadn't had a lot of exposure, but I knew were really excellent writers. And so I invited specific people to contribute to this book. And all of the stories have something to do with or focus on a theme of a storm, whether it's a weather-related event, an environmental-type situation, or an inner storm of some kind. And mm-hmm. so the invitations went out. The stories came in. They were all fantastic. As an editor, I was really blessed. I didn't have to do anything except read great stories.
Which is all a reader has to do. And it is just packed with one great story, engaging story after another. So, Richard, we're going to go ahead and let you begin chatting with our contributing authors that are here with us tonight. And I'm just going to turn it over to Richard Prosh.
So what I would like to do is just mention each of the three authors here tonight. I wanted to kind of give the little bit of a background and tell you about their story. So Scott has a story, and I've got a little cheat sheet here, but Scott has a story called Hurricane at Hog's Holler, which is a dramatic story. It's got a serious side, but it's also really fun and really hilarious. Elizabeth has a great story, about kind of pioneer spirit and family spirit, and it's called Valiant for Truth. And then Denise has a story that she co-wrote. And one of the reasons I invited Denise to participate in the anthology was because she has a unique experience in that she was writing with a co-author. And so her story is the only story in the book that's co-authored by her and Natalie Klein Bright. And they write together. And I thought that was really neat. It's a story that's called The Cowtown Wind, and it's set in Dodge City. So I would just like to ask each of you about your story a little bit and kind of tell us just a little bit about the title and about the idea of the storm. So we'll start with Elizabeth. Your story is called Valiant for Truth. So that's kind of a familiar character name to me from Pilgrim's Progress. Why did you name your story that? And what were you thinking about when you wrote your story?
Well, I don't remember exactly when the title came to me, but I liked the name, Valiant for Truth, because it kind of fit with the general idea of the story about standing for truth and refusing to participate in a lie in spite of the odds against you. And, it just seemed like a good fit. And I hadn't actually read Pilgrim's Progress in several years when I actually sat down to write the story, but when I opened it up and flipped through to the Valiant for Truth scenes to find some of the bits that were used in the story, I was actually delighted how some of the passages fit in without my having planned it that way. And they actually helped me with some of the scenes I was writing. The general idea, the whole atmosphere of the story, one of the things I like to do is, you know, there's so many stories in the Western genre about loners, wanderers, drifters, but I'm also fascinated with the idea of the families who helped settle the frontier. And so I like sometimes focusing on family stories, stories of family relationships set in the West, which you don't see quite as often. And I really love the idea of writing a story like this one about a husband and wife who work as a team, you know, fighting against the elements as they do in the story, and also against more personal enemies.
Right. That all came through really strong. And I like that idea of kind of the lone hero that stands for truth. But in your case, it wasn't like a Clint Eastwood type of hero, or, you know, we think about the lone ranger or something, the tropes, you know, the Western tropes. You really took that lone hero idea and did something different with it. And so did Denise. Denise, in your story, similarly, you have a lone hero who has to go to Dodge City, but it's not a gunfighter or something. It's a young woman who actually learns about a job or takes a job that I hadn't ever really read too much about dancing in the saloon and like being a dancer to entertain some of the guests. So could you tell us a little bit about A Cowtown Wind?
Well, right. It's A Cowtown Wind. And I was fortunate to work with Natalie Bright again. And Natalie, I think for the last year and a half or so, has been researching Cowtown. So it was perfect. She's written and put together some beautiful Chuckwagon cookbooks. So she had that experience behind her and she brought that to the table. And so we did have a heroine, so to speak, but she's a young lady, 16 years old, and she's traveling with her parents, and her whole life they have told her that she's an aristocrat. So they're from England. And I thought it was pretty cool that Natalie came to me. My dog just came in the room. Natalie came to me, and I think she'd been at a baby shower, and the baby's name was Cecily. And so we had a phone conversation, and she said, "Don't you think that's the prettiest name? And it's different. Maybe it was used in, you know, older times, whatever." So it kind of all formed from that. The name Cecily, Cowtown Wind, your idea of the anthology about storms, and we just brainstormed about wind and, you know, how it would be. So it does, you know, take you down some different trails. And about the dancing, Cecily's parents, even though they're supposed to be aristocrats, there's a bit of a mystery because her dad, you know, maybe they have not fallen on hard times, but something's happened with their money. So he encourages her to get a job, and of all places, in the saloon. And here she's all highbrow, so to speak. And she asks him, couldn't it be in the hat shop, in the millinery shop? But no, he got her a job dancing. And I had fun thinking about it all and researching it. The dances were a dime for a dance, but she only gets to keep 2 cents of it. So she's got to make money to help her parents. And that's kind of the gist of the story. But there's a lot of little twists and turns. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of neat twists in your story and in Elizabeth's story. There's some really neat twists at the end that I really liked, and I won't give any spoilers, but it's worth remembering that at the end of both of those stories, there's some really neat things going on. Right. Scott's story is another story about a heroic figure that comes to town, a heroic figure of the times that maybe a lot of us might not think would be in coming into town along, you know, we're thinking maybe, again, it's like John Wayne or Clint Eastwood or somebody, but no, it's Oscar Wilde. And I was delighted by that. I thought this is a really fun story. Again, it's got some serious themes going on underneath, but you've got some hilarious stuff. And tell us, how did you incorporate Oscar Wilde into something and keep it lighthearted, but yet how did you do it? Tell us about it.
Well, first I want to say that I really love Denise and Elizabeth stories. I mean, I was profoundly moved by both of them. And I mean, those were really emotional stories. I was deeply touched by both. So I think mainly because of the way Oscar Wilde ended up, he's seen as a tragic figure. But if you're an Oscar Wilde buff like I am, you realize that he's really this profoundly comic figure. He had a great sense of humor, fabulous sense of humor. And he actually toured the American West in the early 1880s. And he ended up in little cow towns where he was actually, you know, talking about Benvenuto Cellini to miners. Why, I don't know. And when Richard said that the storms in the story could be emotional or forces of personality, I thought of a hurricane going through a town or blowing through a town, you know, rather like Oscar Wilde, mixing everything up and then just leaving. And, you know, everything is different in its wake. You know, not to give too much away, but Oscar shows up in this small fly speck of a town called Hogs Holler. And also on the train with him is the new town doctor, who's this little Japanese man, Dr. Satsuma. And everyone cannot fawn over Oscar Wilde enough, while everyone is loathing the town doctor. So Oscar pretends to be sick and changes the town. So, and if you wanted to know how it came to me, I started thinking about this story when I was in college. So if I had written it then, I would have actually chiseled it into stones. So I'm very happy to do it on a computer.
Yeah. All three stories are so fun. Richard, can I just ask Elizabeth one quick question? Elizabeth, we did not realize Valiant for Truth was Pilgrim's Progress, and we heard that the other night. So I went kind of looking to find more information because it had been so long since I had read Pilgrim's Progress. And in the story, there is also a Jerusalem blade. And I wondered if the pen in your story, if you had had any thoughts about that pen being somewhat like the Jerusalem blade, or is that just me, Bobby, the reader, you know, trying to make connections that don't exist?
Well, I have to be honest and say it never occurred to me, but I think it's so neat when readers see things like that in stories that we didn't really imagine when we were writing, but it fits. I suppose maybe you could say in this case, the pen was mightier than the sword.
And
the
sword. There you go. Exactly. There you go. Yeah. And Denise, I do hope that you continue that story. It needs a whole series. I hope you and Natalie pick up whether it's short story. There's a whole.
I think so too. There. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. That means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, you just had me laughing and pensive, mm-hmm. and then laughing again, and then. Your description of Oscar Wilde is read aloud worthy. That whole story is read aloud worthy, but your description of him is just wonderful. The three of you, these were delightful, engaging, and surprising stories with twists and turns that we did not expect. You took us places that we were not expecting to go, and we love that as readers. So, back to you, Richard.
Scott, you did something in the story that I really loved, and that was not only did you have real Oscar Wilde quotes. So when Oscar Wilde says something and it sounds like Oscar Wilde, it should, because some of the quotes you used were actual things Oscar Wilde said at one time or another. And of course, if you are a Wilde buff, you know that he had a lot of infamous phrases, and sometimes maybe they weren't always accurate or not. But you did that, and you also used the headlines of the newspapers, and you used them so cleverly. I wanted to know if you had a kind of a background in researching all of that. Did you have a, you know, what did you have for notes? I would have thought you would have had a lot of notes for all of that.
No, I hate to disappoint you. So when I was in high school, when I went to college, I had a double major in English Lit and Art History and a minor in theater because I wanted to be completely unemployable. And then, but when I was in high school, I was a big fan of horror movies, just an enormous fan of monster pictures. And Vincent Price was in a one-man show about Oscar Wilde, you know, and he blew into town in New York. And I so loved Vincent Price. I knew nothing about Oscar Wilde, but I loved Vincent Price so much that I actually called up the theater and I said, I will usher the theater. I'll be an usher at the theater for free if I can watch every performance. So he was there for something like 4 months. And I saw Vincent Price, you know, do Oscar Wilde for 4 months, every performance. Oh. And everything he said in that show, it was a play called Diversions and Delights by a man named John Gay, I think. That, you know, some of them are now just sort of, you know, if somebody were to hit my head and you looked at my brain, you'd see these quotes, you know, tattooed on my forehead. So I didn't really have to do a lot of research. I just had to remember them. But I do say with a certain amount of pride that about 50% of them in the story I made up myself. So if you listen to, and Elizabeth and Denise, you know, I'm sure you have the same thing too. When you're a writer, you know, you're writing with language, but you're also writing with your ear. And if you listen to somebody like Wilde, or if you're listening to, you know, people in the American frontier, you get this cadence. And if you get the cadence right, you can pretty much come close enough to do it. So it was really just a question of cadence.
Yeah, yeah. Elizabeth has some really great dialogue and cadence in her story, which I thought was really neat, how you were able to have this kind of loving family and this mother and daughter. And then the bad guys, and there's some pretty violent scenes in your thing. and not violent in a way that are like disturbingly violent, but just surprisingly tough, you know?
It's a little more intense, I suppose you could say, than most things that I've written. I think I surprised myself a little bit, but like you said, not gory violence, but a bit of intensity, yes. Mm-hmm. But I think what was both the challenge and enjoyable, I mean, the best stories, both the challenge and enjoyable, but is it was kind of like I wanted to use the dialogue to create suspense. Mm-hmm. You know, have it unfold mostly through the dialogue that you're hearing through, seeing through the eyes and hearing through the ears of the little girl who's watching all this going on and trying to process it. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting trying to create suspense like that.
Yeah, it was really successful. It really was. And Denise, you guys have perfect, you and Natalie are simpatico in that you have perfect dialogue all the time. Oh, it just works together so well.
I did want to say about Scott and Elizabeth's stories, I really became more of a reader reading each of their stories because their descriptions and just everything, their use of the language, I felt so totally immersed in that scenery and that, you know, I felt like I was there. And I think that's probably the goal of a lot of us writers, to have a reader feel that. So I just wanted to compliment them that, you know, instead of being more of the writer, I became a reader reading theirs.
Richard, we're going to take a very short break, if that's okay. We are talking about this fabulous anthology, Through Western Storms. And if you are a writer, let's take a listen to Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison and find out what they can do for you. And when we come back, more with this cast of authors. We'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Richard Prowse, and he's authors in his new anthology that Bobby's holding right here.
Scott, Denise, and Elizabeth, and Richard, it's right back to you. Take it away.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to mention, guys, that we were honored to have Through Western Storms. It's available in paperback and ebook, digital format. But we were also honored to have a partner in Thorndike Publishing, and Thorndike has put out a library-bound hardcover large print version of the book that's also available through Amazon and in library catalogs everywhere. Yeah, it's a really nice looking hardcover, isn't it? They did a great job.
We're all holding it up. Paperback and hardcover. All
right. And you know Richard, I wanted to say that I loved the paper. It's so smooth, and I was just enjoying, you know, reading, going down the line, and it just feels so nice, this book.
I have to say, seeing the hardcover large print version was one of the biggest thrills of the whole process, because I've seen so many of these Thorndike large print editions, checked them out of the library, because that's often the only edition you can find sometimes when you're looking for a classic Western. And seeing the familiar layout, familiar font, and wow, my own words in one of these hardbacks. That was fun.
It's great, really, that tactile book. I know a lot of people love ebooks, but I have to hold the book.
I have to, too.
Yeah, me too. So I wanted to ask each of you about your process of writing. And all of you have written short stories and you've written longer works. So we've talked a little bit about this before, but how do you know when you've got an idea, or if I were to come to you and say, write a short story, how do you know that what you're writing is going to be a short story or a novel? What are the different takes? How do you set yourself up differently? How do you think differently about novels as opposed to short stories? Just go ahead. Somebody jump in and tell me about that process.
I was going to say that a novel is like a romance, and a short story is like a quick smooch. There are some times where you really want a quick smooch, and there are some times when you want a romance. And I'm sure both of you will agree with me that a short story is more like, ideally it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, but it's more of a vignette than the sustained thing. You're shooting for a single emotional point as opposed to a series of emotional points that you would do over a novel. What do you guys think?
I think that short stories can be more difficult, for sure, because they're so concise, they're so tight. And with Natalie, you know, I've written these other books that, you know, if we have 70, 80, whatever, 1,000 words to go, you can meander a little bit and you can take your time a little bit. You still have to, you know what you're doing. But I think short stories can be more difficult, but fun.
I think that for me, sometimes because I kind of mull a story over in my mind a lot before I ever put anything down on paper, even take notes. And so I kind of get a feel for whether I think, is this going to fit within a short story or does it need more space? And I don't know, I usually know pretty early in the process whether something's going to be long or short. And some things I just start out with the plan, this is going to be a short story. And so far, I don't think anything's really gotten away from me from that point. But it can be harder. I sometimes, if I'm trying to keep under a certain word count, sometimes I have a hard time with that. But
yeah, word count is hard for me. It's hard for me sometimes to hit really close. Sometimes I'm either too short or just way too long. When I was first starting out, one of my favorite books of all time is Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury, which is kind of a series of short pieces put together. And Bradbury was great at doing that. He did that with The Martian Chronicles as well, with a series of short stories put together as a book. And so when I first started out, that was how I could get length. I could write shorter stories quickly because I could think of the whole thing in my head at once. I could get a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then I could just thematically follow that through. And later on, I realized that that's neat, but that's not necessarily all a novel should be. So a novel should be maybe some, or could be, can be other things as well and something longer. So
I just wanted to jump in and say that Dandelion Wine is one of the books that made me a writer. And wherever Ray Bradbury is, God bless
him. Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
Well, so can I ask Elizabeth and Denise a question?
Absolutely. Yep.
So I just said Bradbury. You know, he said Bradbury, and you can't see it, but my face is getting all red because I'm now teary because I'm thinking about Ray Bradbury. So who was that voice when you were young and younger? And just reading, and you said, I think I want to do this. So for me, it was Bradbury and Conan Doyle. What about you guys?
Well, if you go back to literally when I was a little girl, it might have been Marguerite Henry. I was your stereotypical horse crazy little girl, and I read all of Marguerite Henry's horse books. And I think that was one of the things that made me love historical fiction too, because so many of her books were historical. But I can remember being like 10, 11 years old and thinking, I want to be a writer like Marguerite Henry.
I think I'm with Elizabeth a little bit because I liked the horse books. Bobby, were you jumping in?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was commercial or something.
Oh, but not yet. In a moment. Not yet.
Sorry. So I think when I was a kid, I did read the horse books. But to tell you the truth, when I think back, it's like I was almost more of a writer as a kid than a reader. And even into my teens. And I had girlfriends who would read these big, thick, historical fiction. And they talk about these books. And I wasn't really that kind of a reader when I was younger. But then, of course, when I got into school and it was journalism, so I think a lot of my life was like business writing, journalism, and things like that. It's like I knew I wanted to be a writer without some of the reading even. It's kind of weird.
Richard, can I be terrible and ask one more question?
Go ahead.
Okay.
So Elizabeth and Denise, so you both said historical fiction. And sometimes people don't consider Westerns to be historical fiction. So I just wanted, I'm putting the three of you or all five of you on the burner here. Westerns are historical fiction.
I actually feel pretty strongly about that. I say yes. I mean, in my own mind, I treat Western as a subgenre of historical fiction. Okay. I mean, I don't see a Western as a story that has to have like certain plot elements like the gunfighter or the showdown and so forth. I see it as a time and a place. And, you know, very often my stories will have some of the classic elements, but I view it as historical fiction.
What about you, Denise?
Can I just say something to that, Scott? Westerns for me, definitely historical fiction, but I also see like the eerie Westerns. I am loving them. And Westerns that are romance, and there are Westerns that are mystery. And there are, so I see Western and there's historical fiction, but I see that every kind of genre, subgenre as a reader, they're all under that. You can find them. You can find science fiction in Western. So whatever you like to, you can find poetry, you know, you can listen to music. If Western is your thing, you can find, you know, cookbook. I mean, you can find every sort of thing that is what you love, you can find in Western writing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I like to also say that I like to distinguish. I really enjoy writing contemporary Westerns.
Yeah, and there's that
where some people do like to write about the Old West. I just felt that maybe I wasn't qualified to write about covered wagons. And, you know, of course you can do your research, but I just prefer, I really like contemporary Western.
I this isn't contemporary now, but I also enjoy writing 20th century Westerns. I like the 1930s and 40s are a favorite historical period of mine. And I have enjoyed writing some Western stories set in that time too.
That's nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that we tried to accomplish with the anthology with Through Western Storms is to try to get a we don't have anything really contemporary or too outlandish. We don't have any science fiction, but you know, I think we tried to get a wide variety of some very poignant stories, some funny stories. There's a couple stories along with Scott's. There's a story by Preston Lewis that's hilarious. Some very dramatic stories that are really deep and tragic even. And I think that there was a good balance, and that's what we were trying to achieve, and everybody came through with flying colors on that.
We're going to take another short break, Richard. At all. And of course, we're talking about Through Western Storms. And we'd like to just take a moment and show you one of the places that you can find most all of the books of all of our guests of Rendezvous with a Writer and other favorite things that you might be looking for. And that is the Out West Shop page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, more conversation about writing. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Money with the Writer. We're talking about Richard Frost. We're talking to Elizabeth, Scott, and Denise. This stuff getting all these names in here. See, I want to ask a question, Scott. You know, you said that your story on Hog's Holler goes back a long time. You thought about that
in high school.
Quarterback in high school, right?
Yeah. When did I graduate?
No, when did you actually bring the story to fruition? When did you actually write it?
Actually, when Richard asked me to, I thought about it for a bazillion years, and I was so it's about a not all that subtle form of racism. Also, the story, and I don't think if I had written it earlier, I would have been grown up enough to have done it. But now that I'm old enough where I need people to chew my food for me, I'm actually, I think, in a place in my head where I can do it and give it the gravitas it deserved while making it funny. But I don't think I don't even think I could have done it 10 years ago. So, and I'm thank heavens for your ask.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's kind of a cool idea that I hadn't thought of. So, Elizabeth and Denise, how do you feel about the difference? What's the difference between you now and maybe 5 or 7 years ago as a writer? Where have you grown? Where do you see yourself? And where do you see yourself in the future then, maybe 7 or 10 years from now?
Well, can I jump in? we're both sighing. I think for me, if I think back 5, 7, 10 years ago, whatever, I've also been heavily involved in editing. So I've had this business career, did a lot of, communications, whatever, and then I did freelance editing. So I really spent a lot of years editing other people's novels. And I just had a knack for that. But then joined Western Writers of America. And I did write, other things, but not published. So I always wrote my whole life, kind of on the side of my corporate job. And so joined Western Writers, met Natalie, one thing led to another. We clicked and an idea was born. And then we started writing fiction. So that was my real jump into the pool of fiction writing. So that was probably, I met her maybe in 2015. Yeah. So that was my story.
Well, I guess looking back 5 or 10 years, I just hope I'm a little more mature as a person. So I hope that reflects in writing. And the more you write, the more you learn about writing. Mm-hmm. And I think I've gotten a little bit more polished technically over time. When I look back at things I wrote when I was very young, I can see the difference.
Yeah.
I think maybe I figured out a little bit more what my own strengths and tastes are and kind of focus more on that. Whereas earlier on, I kind of experimented all over the place. What I hope for the future, more novels. I mean, as much as, we've been talking about short stories and I love short stories, but I would like to write more novels.
I think that when I started, I tended to, like everybody, and like they kind of tell you that you should, mentors, often writing mentors tell you that if you find somebody you like say Ray Bradbury, go ahead and write kind of like Ray and get that idea and feel that, and then you'll develop your own voice. And I did that for several years where I was, I was trying to write like Ray Bradbury or I was trying to write like Harlan Ellison. But if you know Harlan Ellison, I just didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't have the number of billions of words that he uses, 20 syllable words. I didn't know those. So I couldn't really write like that. And I had to start to write like myself. So, you do develop that. And I think that when I started, as I go back and look, I can read things that I wrote and I can see who I was imitating at the time. I say, I was imitating, this author, that author. But now I hope that I hope that now and in the future, I'm developing my own unique voice that eventually is unique. While still, I think it is a skill. I think it's a good skill for authors to be able to write in different voices, still develop some of those other voices, but have my core voice that is me.
So and I think you also get to a point where you write things that are inspired by your heroes, but you realize you're doing it, you're putting your own spin on it, doing it in your own way.
Exactly. Right. Right. Exactly. So Bobby, we wanted to talk about what everybody is doing besides the work that's in the anthology. And I wanted to make sure we all had time to talk about what other projects you're working on in 2025. And, even beyond, because publishing now takes longer sometimes. So we're looking at 2026. Books come out in 2026, 2027 that you might be just working on now. So let's start with Denise. What are you looking at now?
Well, I was also prepared to show what I have done recently.
Okay.
Just some books that came out a few months back, or in the spring, I guess. My mystery, it's contemporary Western. This is Stalker or Saint, contemporary Western, but with a mystery. And, you know, it's funny, when I was thinking about this, I thought, I sometimes have difficulty in a story killing people off. You have to be very, very gentle about it and this and that. However, in this book, the very first words are, her brother was dead. So obviously I did kill some off. So that's what I'd like to do in the future. This little series was three books, Stalker, Saint. It's okay. About a girl who shows horses and her brother, well, whether he's dead or missing, so we don't know about that yet. She meets a detective guy. They have a relationship. The second one is Pegasus Flying, and there is a newspaper that she works at called Pegasus. Again, about horse showing. This one has more about corrupt people in horse shows. The third one in this series is Hero Brothers, and I had a lot of fun. You know, all the same characters. It's all the same series, but they're kind of ex-military guys. And so I had great fun. I'd really never done it this extensively as far as the research. So when so-and-so goes undercover and he's wearing an expensive watch, it was fun for me to research, you know, well, what's the latest? If I had a gazillion dollars, what do men wear as their wristwatch? So that was fun. So that's what I've kind of done this past year. For the future, I'd love to continue this series. I just have to work on it, you know, talk to a publisher or the publisher, we'll see. But also some short stories. So I'm going to expand on that too.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And Denise is actually going to be back.
Oh, yes.
To talk about that mystery series, and she's going to be with us on July 24th. So mark that down on your calendar.
That's right. You just reminded me. I better make sure.
Elizabeth, what are you working on?
Lately or in future or both?
Both.
Okay. Well, most... Over the past year, I was working on more Western short stories. My most recent release was a short story collection of my own. And my current project is actually a short story for another multi-author anthology, a collaborative effort with several different indie authors. Hasn't been officially announced yet, but you'll be hearing about it later in the year. It's Western stories, classic Westerns again. Several authors, as it turned out, all women authors, we didn't plan it that way, that's just the way it turned out, who write in several different genres, including Western, some really fantastic indie authors in there, so that should be fun. And then once I finish that story, what I hope and plan to be working on for the rest of the year is I have a Western mystery novel in progress, which is set in the 1940s on a Montana dude ranch, kind of like your classic closed circle, limited suspect whodunit, but in a contemporary, semi-contemporary Western setting. So that's hopefully my next novel. Don't know exactly when, but it's going to be my focus.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds great. How about you, Scott?
Well, I'm very lucky this year so far, because not only am I in True Western Storms, but with my publisher, DSP, I'm continuing my series of Westerns, traditional Westerns, with a marshal called Ezra Flint, so it's the Ezra Flint stories. And the next one coming out in probably just a few weeks is called Flint Revenge. But then for Down and Out books, I have a book coming out I'm extraordinarily proud of. It's called Targets West. Called Targets West, and it is a contemporary thriller. And the twist is that the hero is an American rancher who ends up in a multinational conspiracy, and he jumps from Wyoming to New York to London to Dubai, then back to London. My editor at Down and Out calls it the the James Bond played by Clint Eastwood book. It's essentially a traditional spy story with an American rancher as opposed to your slicker and more sophisticated playboy. And it's gotten a lot of great advance notices. And it debuts March 12th, and you can pre-order it now. Targets West, you can pre-order it now on Amazon. And if that's not a plug, I don't know what it is.
And Scott will be with us May 15th.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we're looking at is we'll be on again, right, Bobby and Jim,
yes,
in September.
Mm-hmm.
With some more authors from Through Western Storms, and we'll talk about some of their stories. And we'll also talk a little bit more in September about our next anthology, which tentatively is titled In Western Towns.
Oh.
So the first two anthologies that I put together for Western Fictioneers were Under Western Stars and Over Western Trails. And now we have Through Western Storms, and we'll have In Western Towns.
Oh.
So we'll have a nice, you know, bunch of things on the shelf then. And In Western Towns, it will be the same sort of format as this, in that we will invite specific writers to be a part of it. And, of course, the three here tonight, our three writers will be invited to participate, if they can and if they would like to. And, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit bigger anthology. I anticipate a few more. Did we have 12 stories in this one?
I think so.
12 stories. So we'll have closer to probably 18 in the next anthology. So it'll be a little bigger, but again, we hope to do some things that are beyond the regular tropes of Westerns. Mm-hmm. Not that the tropes aren't, and like Elizabeth said earlier, you know, it's fun to use some of the tropes, but it's also fun to explore other things and maybe push the boundaries and show the world. I think that there's a lot of Western literature that there's a lot of possibilities that maybe people haven't even thought of yet.
Mm-hmm. I want to write a sequel to my story. I'm going to call it The Wild Wild West.
Oh, okay.
Wild Wild with an E after the D, wild, right?
Well, okay, that sounds like a segue. That sounds like a segue for me to tell you that Robert Vardman, who writes as Jackson Lowry and has a story in Through Western Storms, Bob Vardman and I work together on a new series called The Guns of Legend, Legend with an E on the end, Scott.
Yeah.
And The Guns of Legend is kind of a take off a little bit on the Wild Wild West, in that Alistair Legend is a character who has sort of a group of agents that work all over the place in the West, and he directs them into nefarious situations, and they use lots of different gadgets and things and all sorts of fun. And so The Guns of Legend, Bob has written three and I've written three. And those are already out, but we're going to have some more, and we will be reissuing the ones that are already out with new covers and some new introductions and things like that. So The Guns of Legend will be out this spring.
Very fun. Yeah. Well, Jim has a quote. I'm just looking at our time, folks. Jim has a quick quote. We have like 2 minutes left.
This is from Scott's story, you know, and it's kind of antithesis. It's the opposite, kind of the idea we get from Elizabeth's story. But I thought it was kind of funny. Oscar Wilde says, "My lies are artful representations of the truth. Never, ever let something like the truth get in the way of a beautiful lie."
Well, we thank you all for being with us tonight. Richard Prosh, Scott McRae, Denise F. McAllister, and Elizabeth Grace Foley. We really appreciate you all coming on with us. Next week, Mark Warren joins us. I've just started reading this fabulous book. This is The Last Serenade for Billy Bonney. a novel on Billy the Kid. I've always been interested in Billy the Kid, and now living in Albuquerque, Billy the Kid is even, you know, more prominent. So this is a just a really, really wonderful read. And we want to just thank once again the Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison and Out West Shop for supporting the show. And you can catch this streaming on all major podcast channels later this evening, and of course on YouTube and Facebook and such. It's episode 123. And Jim,
we want to thank all you folks for being on tonight. That's the first thing.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading.
Thank
and
you.
We'll see you down the trail.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.